Senate Committee on Appropriations will now come to order. Good morning and welcome to the hearing on the Appropriations Committee. In response to the COVID-19 emergency and to protect the public, legislators, and employees, we must limit non-essential gatherings and adhere to social distancing and face governing guidelines. In compliance with those orders, the Senate has made necessary adjustments to normal practices in order to ensure the public continues to have access to the legislative process. We're holding our committee hearing here in the O Street Building, and I'll ask for members of the committee who are here present in 1200 so we can establish our quorum and begin our hearing. To allow the public access, we've admitted members of the public in the hearing room to the extent that social distancing requirements allow. We'll be using a teleconference service for those individuals who wish to testify today. For all others wishing to provide public comment, the participation toll-free number and access code is posted on our committee website. It will be displayed on the screen, and I'll announce it now. Today's participant number is 844-291-6364. I'll say that again, 844-291-6364. And the access code is 5255173. 5255173. For detailed instructions on how the teleconference system works, please refer to the Senate or committee website. When we move to public comment, you will be prompted by a moderator to dial 1, then 0 for support and opposition. Press this only one time and wait patiently for an operator to assign you a line number. There may be a short wait. Once you receive your line number, you will wait in the queue for the moderator to call your line number. At that time, you will be unmuted and you'll be ready to address the committee. Please note that in order for us to hear you clearly and to avoid any acoustic feedback, you must mute the device you are watching the hearing on prior to giving testimony over the phone. Remember that. When you're called upon, mute the phone you're listening. It's important that we hear from you, and we don't want to have any interference. Obviously, I'll maintain decorum during the hearing, as is customary, and any individual who is disruptive may be removed from the remote meeting service or have their connection muted. It's also a good time to remind everyone providing testimony that this is a fiscal committee, and please limit your testimony to the fiscal aspects of the bill you are testifying on, and please refrain from repeating your prior testimony. We're not relitigating the merits, we're just focusing on the fiscal impact. We only have one bill today, which is eligible for a do-pass motion. The Department of Finance has informed us that they do not have a file on the bill. We are hearing, and then their representative will not be participating. Before we hear presentation on the bill, let's establish our quorum. Mr. Chief Consultant, would you please call the roll?
Senator Portantino.
I am here.
Portantino here. Senator Bates?
Here.
Bates here. Senator Bradford? Senator Jones?
Here.
Senator Jones here. Senator Kamlauger?
Here.
Senator Kamlauger here. Senator Laird?
Here.
Senator Laird here. Senator Witkowski?
Here.
Witkowski here. We have six members present.
We have a quorum. Now, before we move on to the business, I just want to remind everybody that due to the constraints regarding the length of hearings, technology considerations, and cleaning protocols, I reserve the right to institute a time limit on witness testimony. Should this be necessary, each side will be permitted a total of 5 minutes for primary testimony. All others wishing to testify must limit their comments to the name, affiliation, and position on the measure, commonly called a Me Too. If necessary, we will also limit this additional testimony to 12 minutes for each side. As a reminder, all witnesses should limit their testimony to the fiscal impacts of the bill. So our primary witnesses are going to have a total of 5 minutes, and everyone else will be a Me Too, limited to 12 minutes. And I will try to strictly enforce the Me Too provision of comments. The only item on our agenda today is AB 2179 by Assemblymembers Grayson and Wicks. It's an urgency measure that is eligible for a due pass. And so the two of you, our Assembly colleagues, welcome. And please tell us about AB 2179.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and esteemed members of the committee. Assemblymember Wicks, joint author, and I are presenting AB 2179, which will extend eviction protections for tenants who have filed for emergency rental assistance by the end of this month. Since the rent relief program launched 1 year ago, California has led the nation in delivering assistance to those that are most in need and risk of losing their housing. The state program has delivered billions of dollars in direct assistance to date, helping more than 214,000 low-income households pay off rental debt and avoid eviction. One in three payments nationally have been made in California to tenants and landlords that are in need. But it is taking longer than expected for the state to process these applications for COVID-19 emergency rental assistance. Thousands, and that is thousands, continue to wait for relief while their applications pend. It would be cruel and it would be wasteful as well as unfair to subject Californians to eviction or the loss of rental income now when they have done everything that has been asked of them and the distribution of emergency rental assistance is imminent. We are not going to allow the Californians to suffer, to lose their homes or even their income because of application processing times. So AB 2179 is going to help us take care of the thousands of Californians, tenants and landlords alike, who applied for COVID-19 emergency rental assistance and still have their applications pending. This will let us maximize every last emergency rental assistance dollar to people, to keep people housed and also to keep this going until the program ends. And through the chair, if I may, joint author.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members, for hearing us out today. You all know that we had a crisis long before COVID. COVID has exacerbated that crisis, and it has disproportionately impacted brown and black communities. And I think all of us have heard and seen those issues in our districts. And there's much work to be done separately from this bill, right, around more housing production, more protection for tenants that we do have to tackle. You know, and when COVID hit, the state took action. You know, I was a proud co-author of AB 3088, which this body passed in August 2020 to establish eviction protections and to ensure that renters wouldn't lose their home because they were unable to pay rent due to the pandemic. And again, this helps our most vulnerable folks who need the assistance most. Our work is not done. As we speak, hundreds of thousands of renters have applied for rental assistance and they are still in the queue awaiting that assistance. That will expire by the end of day tomorrow. And so it's important that this body, that this committee and the Senate vote for this bill to ensure that those that are in the queue get the protections they need, that we honor our commitment as government when we say there's assistance for you, that we honor that commitment and we ensure that they get the protections that they need. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about this bill, both in the Assembly and obviously now here in the Senate. And I'll recognize and understand that this bill is not perfect, you know, and there's concerns about the preemption pieces, which we've discussed in other committees, which I'm sure many of you will raise in this conversation. And I hear those concerns. But in the end of the day, we have to pass this bill to ensure that those that are in the queue are protected from evictions and that the landlords are made whole, the tenants have a roof over their head, so that we can then go on and address the bigger concerns around our housing crisis, which I implore you all to do. And we'll have other bills in front of you for said work. But again, I know the bill's not perfect. We do have to pass it out of this committee today. My hope is it passes the Senate, gets to the governor's desk in time, because we have hundreds of thousands of people that are hoping to be made whole by this bill. And we respectfully ask for an aye vote.
Thank you, Mr. Grayson and Ms. Wicks. Appreciate it. I am not showing any primary witnesses, so we'll move on to public testimony. Is there anyone here in room 1200 who would like to testify in support of AB 2179? Please come on up.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Deborah Carlton with the California Apartment Association. We're the largest rental property association in the nation. The largest part of our membership are small mom and pops who are also waiting for funding. So we appreciate the narrow approach that you have taken by protecting those who have applied by March 31st, and of course the narrow approach in ensuring that we have statewide consistency. It's very important to our membership that we have consistency throughout the state. So I thank you for moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in this room wishing to testify in support of AB 2179? All right, we will now move to the teleconference line. Moderator, if you would please prompt those individuals waiting to testify in support of AB 2179 and call them forward individually.
Thank you. If you are in support of AB 2179, you may press 1, then 0. Again, that's 1 and then 0 if you are in support of AB 2179. And we will go to line 9. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair and members. Dean Hutchings with the Rennie Public Policy Group. testifying in support on behalf of the City of Mountain View. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we have no further support in queue at this time.
All right. We've heard from the support. Now we'll go to this room. Is there anyone in this room opposed? Seeing no one come to the microphone, moderator, if you would queue up any opposition. Now would be the
Thank
time.
Thank you. If you're in opposition of AB 2179, you may press 1, then 0. Again, that's 1 and then 0 if you're in opposition of AB 2179. In one moment, we do have one in queue where we provide them with their line number. Again, that's 1 and then 0 if you're in opposition of AB 2179. And we'll go to line 10. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Alexander Harnden with the Inner City Law Center. We're extremely, extremely concerned about the impacts to about 2.5 million LA County tenants from the preemption clauses of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have no further opposition in queue at this time.
All right. Thank you to all those who spoke in favor and opposed. As I noted in the opening comments, the Department of Finance is not participating today, so let's bring it back to the committee. Do any of our committee members have any questions or comments about 2179? Mr. Wykowski.
So on the fiscal analysis, the moratorium is going to end on Thursday. This bill doesn't extend it, but shouldn't we characterize, as far as the cost to the courts, will be no additional costs, because on the natural, people, if you weren't here, if you haven't done anything, people would be able to file for unlawful detainers on the first anyway. Is that a good characterization of the cost of this bill, right?
I believe that would be an accurate observation assessment of the bill, yes.
And isn't it true that the federal monies and the state monies that are in the pot to pay the people who haven't received their checks, that money's already been appropriated? There's no new money to send that money out. That money is there. The cost of the state has already been borne on different budgets, and we're just giving more time for people to cash the checks.
Yes, that's correct.
And to the extent that the protections that we gave were for people, people needed, because of the pandemic, people needed the protections 2 years ago. So going forward, with the unemployment rate as low as it's been, and we're reading in a newspaper, beginning in April, who's not going to be included is somebody who can't pay their rent solely for the pandemic or catching COVID. That's the cohort, because I would say the ordinary evictions that go on in any state and in California, those would presume. But we were only protecting the people that were covered solely because of the pandemic. Is that?
So we were protecting anyone that actually filled out an application, and that protection continues. We are extending that protection until we can actually honor our word. If they're in the pipeline, then those are the ones we are protecting.
Right, but that fiscal effect is generated by or constituted by the COVID, solely for the COVID, and the penalty of perjury, right? Now, the facts may have been. So the bill creates, the staff report talks about violations that people may, the actions may be taken into courts, and that may be a cost that have to be borne. If somebody is filed, somebody's waiting for their check, and their landlord seeks an action, that's a state, you know, the courts are run by that. So that may be a minuscule point. The bill also creates a donut hole for till July 1st. We're saying that we're preempting local control for till June 30th, right? So there's a donut hole that's going to be created. Is there anything that would prohibit the local governments on July 1st to do their own local ordinance to say, we're not going to do this, and that fiscal effect will be borne by the courts, right?
Correct, yeah. So as of July 1st, right, local governments can put forth their own protection should they see fit. And certain protections like the City of Oakland, which were already existing, those can continue. There are certain cities like San Francisco and the County of LA that didn't have that in place, so that's where there's the concerns around the preemption.
We like to say in South County, the County of Alameda, although Oakland did pass their own ordinance, yes. The whole County of Alameda.
Correct, you are correct.
Passed an ordinance before Mr. Chu's bill was passed,
yep.
So that would be not protected.
Yep.
Thank you for that fiscal analysis.
Mr. Laird.
I would move the bill.
We have a motion. Do we have any other comments or questions? Yes, Ms. Bates?
A question. To whom does the money go when it's finally released? Does it go to the tenant or the property owner?
It goes to the property owner.
Property owner and...
Or the landlord, yeah.
A number of them are opposed, so what is the protection for them in the meantime? Just if they've made the application for the emergency relief?
Many of them are awaiting funds.
Funds. And is it accurate? I've heard this number, which is staggering to me, that there are 200,000 applications waiting. It sounds like our unemployment department. Mm. Has there been any review of fraudulent applications, knowing that this money is going to actually go for a legitimate
application? I think you are raising important questions in terms of we need to have a look at how this program has been run and ensure that it is run effectively. There's also been concerns around the fact that for non-English speakers, it's been challenging, and the money has been slow to get out. So I think, you know, we as a body, I think, need to have those conversations to ensure that, you know, if we are putting forth social safety net programs, that we're implementing those successfully and that we're helping the folks that we need and intend to.
And Senator Bates, thank you for bringing that up. At this point, it's my understanding that the applications in the pipeline have already been reviewed. It's just a matter of actually getting the money, and which we are doing through this, and actually cutting the checks and sending them out. And so that's the purpose of the extension now, is actually honoring what we've already approved in the applications.
I think that would be an important piece of information to be present when this is finally voted on, that there has been some accountability and some sort of actual verification testing, that these are all have been reviewed and are legitimate. The fraud that's gone on in some of these programs is staggering, and we had I think it's a Channel 4 NBC report on that regarding the mortgage industry and the amount of fraud that has been part of any one of these very, very compelling, very, very important substance, you know, I've got substance abuse on my mind too because I have a bill on that, but anyway, very, very important, very compelling, but there are very compelling stories on both sides of this issue where we have people losing their property because they haven't been paid. We had a very, very tragic representation of that in housing just this week, a woman losing her property because she has been unable to pay her mortgage, and it is her income, her retirement income. So that's a property owner who's been, you know, very compassionate with her tenants, but now compassion is gone, money is gone, home's gone, property's gone, and this is property that she inherited. Sure. That came through her family. So those are things that are very, very trying, troubling in terms of trying to find balance here. If you are protected with this measure and then it expires June 30 and you are then subject to eviction, what is the timeline for that? What is the process for actually going to court and evicting someone when they've even been given this two-month extension? But it's over, they haven't paid the rent. What happens then?
I mean, I think in the situation of someone who's been in the queue, they would have been made whole, right? I think the eviction protections would then end, and they would go through a normal process depending on the circumstances.
And that's at least 6 months to a year itself. So they could continue to occupy the residents until the court and all of the law enforcement part of this was back in, right?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Tomlager, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try my hardest to keep my questions focused on fiscal, since this is a committee. So if I falter, you can forgive me in advance. I do want to say for the record that given this is appropriations and given this is about a fiscal analysis of a bill, Department of Finance should be here because there are questions that folks have where we should have their input. And so that's just for the record. So how come, or maybe it's me, does this bill include costs for staffing up? Because to the prior question, we know that there are 120,000 folks still in the queue at the state level who are waiting for their money. And we know that the delay in getting it out has been for a number of reasons, including just not enough people being able to kind of process through the applications. So does this include that?
So that has been a part of the conversation and the negotiation of this bill was the efficiency of the department itself and whether there was adequate staff, whether the policy or the procedures and the process was flawed, or if there were some challenges or obstacles that were in the way. Those things are being addressed by the administration, being that it's the agency. And so we continue to work with them on that. This bill has not allocated, to my knowledge, any additional funding for staff. The money that's in there is for the renter and the landlord.
So we're extending time to help a process that has been slow and riddled with problems, without any discussion about putting more people on board to help manage this in a quicker, more efficient way.
If I may.
Please.
If I may, we would only assume, because we're talking about people and an agency and people that run the agency and people are imperfect, that yes, we would safely assume that there have been problems or that there have been slow actions in process. However, I think there's something to also consider, and that was the lack of funding that was coming in from the federal government. We knew the money was coming, but it wasn't landing here in California quick enough to be able to disperse into the hands of those that were in the pipeline having approved applications. So, which is why California is stepping up to the plate and making up that difference right now, knowing that that money imminently is coming from the federal government. So now that we have stepped up with an appropriation, we can now make it possible to honor those checks that have been approved.
And can I also just add, I know that we're allowed to use 10 to 15% of the federal funds for administration. I think it was 10% from the first pot of money. And then obviously the application deadline is tomorrow, so we're not expecting any new applicants to come, right? And so we're playing catch up here for the next couple months with this extension. Though I hear your points, and I think we all have heard them from our constituents as well around the frustrations of the program. So I just wanted to let you know we can use some of those federal funds for staffing. For staffing.
Well, I mean, I think the appropriations is fine. But it's also a matter of, like, making sure that the infrastructure is properly funded so that you can do the business. I mean, because the narrative is that California is flush with money. And so we could probably, you know, pay up first and fight to get reimbursements on the back end from the feds if the goal is to make sure that we have a program that is properly funded, that is scalable, that is getting money out to constituents. And just for the record, I have to say, it's very hard to hear when your own county calls in to say they have a problem with the bill. You know, 40 million Californians, this thing at the state level has gotten out to, you know, maybe we're reaching 200,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's why I'm asking about the fiscal part of this, because if you're going to do it, we have to figure out a way to do it right.
And I think I share those concerns. And, you know, this isn't a policy committee, but I do think those are the right questions to be asking. And ultimately, I think the goal that we're trying to do here is give ourselves that time so that the administration can implement the program so that those that are on the hook will be made whole. But I do think we have to have some analysis around the effectiveness of the program and some lessons learned. This and other programs during COVID, I think, fall into that same category. But I share the concern, and you're not wrong to raise the flags. But the point of this bill is to really give the administration more time and HCD more time to honor those commitments. And the other thing I'll say, too, is I think there's concerns around the outreach of the program, right? We don't have an effective way to communicate this program as a government, that it even existed, and particularly for non-native English speakers and those that maybe don't navigate government in the same way because of language barriers or other issues, that was a very real concern, and it has been borne out when you see who has actually applied for the program. So those are issues that I do think need to be addressed.
So has there been any thought about if it may take longer than June to get to the folks that are in the queue?
I mean, I think it's our hope that that will give us enough time to honor all the commitments that we've had.
I'm at the threshold of going beyond the fiscal questions, so I'm going to release myself from my own stress.
Thank you. Mr. Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, follow the lines of questioning that Senator Kammlager had, because I, too, have been contacted by my county. I've been contacted by small landlords. And, again, to have this money and really the state, just like EDD, we're the roadblock, we're the impediment. And so to be flush with cash or at least having money to reimburse and make folks whole, but we have not the infrastructure to disseminate and get the money to the people that needs it, it's almost like a facade. It's almost, you know, theatrics. And so I think standing up these agencies and making sure that they're properly staffed will allow us to do what all our intentions are, to make people whole. But when we don't have the internal workings, you know, first fixed, that's the frustration. We're here today because of poor staffing and poor preparation for this. So I think that should be a priority. I think that should have been some of the first questions asked. Mm-hmm. Is infrastructure in place to get these checks to the people who need it? And it seems like it's still not in place. So.
Senator Bradford, you're again right about your comments, what you've made. However, along with the call for improvement and making sure staffing is adequate, we are facing a deadline that comes to us tomorrow. And many, many, many tens of thousands are going to be on the hook if we don't take action and help people. So I appreciate your comments, and that's something that we need to continue as a legislative body to provide oversight, mm-hmm. and make sure that we continue to improve our state agencies. And in doing so, we need to also make sure that we keep people whole, especially when they've done what we've asked them to do.
No, I totally understand the deadline, and I'm not criticizing the fact that we have to take action, but what I'm talking about should have been happening well before we got here, you know, and making sure these agencies were properly staffed and prepared to do what needs to be done. So
comments well taken.
Further comments? Would you like to close?
I respectfully ask for a aye vote.
Fantastic. This is a do pass motion with a refer the bill to the Senate floor. Do we have a motion?
Yes, I made it a while ago.
Mr. Laird made a motion. So with that, Mr. Consultant, would you please call the roll?
Assembly Bill 2179, the motion is due pass to the Senate floor. Senator Portantino.
Aye.
Portantino, aye. Senator Bates.
No.
Bates, no. Senator Bradford.
Aye.
Bradford, aye. Senator Jones.
Aye.
Jones, aye. Senator Kammlager.
Yes.
Kammlager, aye. Senator Laird.
Aye.
Laird, aye. Senator Wieckowski.
Aye.
Wieckowski, aye. Vote is six to one.
The bill is out, 6-1. That is our only matter of business. No need to put it on call since everybody was here. With that,
I got to go back to whatever.
The committee, no closing comment. Thank you all for being here, providing your testimony. Your comments are important to us, and everything will be included in the record. And so thank you for your patience. Thank you. We've included the agenda, and this committee meeting is adjourned.